You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Andrew Little, I spoke to him this week about... I can't even remember, I'm so excited. I spoke to him about political donations and also biases in the justice system when it comes to drug-related offences. Here is Andrew.
Do you feel political donations are transparent enough?
We've got a regime that has been pretty good up to now. In fact, it's been better than most other countries. But look, there evidently are still problems. And the idea that, you know, a political party in whatever circumstances starts breaking up what looks like an original large donation into smaller ones to kind of keep it under the radar and not ensure full disclosure, that does start to look problematic. And I think it is time for us to have a closer look at what we've got to make sure that there is a healthy level of transparency.
Do you think there should be state funding for political parties?
Look, I'd be expressing a personal view, which is I think it is something we need to look at. That is the ultimate way to make sure that parties aren't susceptible to, you know, the overtures of incredibly wealthy donors. But this is it's an issue that's been trotted out time and again, and New Zealanders haven't shown any particular appetite for it. It's certainly that, you know, the parties of the right who tend to, you know, have big wealthy donors always campaign against it on the basis of, you know, not a good use of taxpayer money and look what they will do and there's no accountability, all the rest of it. I mean, we have a level of state funding, at least when it comes to election campaigning, with the broadcasting allocation, but that is for the purposes of electioneering. It's not for running a party. I certainly think it is time for us as a country to have a good debate about how do we avoid the risk and the growing risk, I think, of corrupt practices. And I don't mean that in any kind of, I'm not pointing the finger at anybody, but corrupt practices entering our kind of political framework, because I think that is one thing we need to avoid.
Now, do you feel sort of the way the system currently works, that it is a way of possibly buying influence by wealthy donors?
Well, when you see, look, we know they are around. We know that there are some donors to political parties, typically they're on the parties of the right and centre-right, that provide huge donations. We know that the ACT Party, for example, has survived for many years on the donations of a very small number of very wealthy people. So, and you can't, you'll never avoid in those circumstances the inference to be drawn that somehow people who are providing big donations have a level of influence that is, you know, that may be seen as unhealthy. And I think, you know, certainly for parties like Labor and National, two long-standing big parties, significant parties, the last thing that we want in our political system is for those two big parties, and for that matter, the medium-sized parties, New Zealand First and the Greens, to give the appearance that somehow they are susceptible to influence that isn't known or transparent to the public. And that's just something, for the sake of our political system, we have to seek to avoid.
Because I suppose there is a perception with things like sort of fundraising dinners that if you can afford it, you do have more access to politicians than the regular Joe. I mean, is this a worry?
Yeah, I think that's the thing is that, you know, there's sort of unwritten conditions attached to a large donation, is that I'll get to buddy up with the minister, or, you know, get a bit of airtime with the minister and or the prime minister, and kind of influence what happens. There's always the risk of that, if not, you know, the perception of it, if we don't have a, you know, thoroughly transparent sort of regime.
So, do you think this is a problem within your own party?
Look, I mean, we run fundraisers. I think what typically happens is that ministers, before an event happens, might offer a, you know, opportunity to have a morning tea that's put up for auction, although, you know, the prices we tend to attract in the hundreds and not the millions, I think. So that does happen. Whether that, you know, you would ever describe that as constituting kind of undue influence. I have to say the times, I mean, there are plenty of times when I put up having a morning tea or an afternoon tea with me, people bid for it and pay for it but never pick up the opportunity. And the one occasion the person did, was they spent the full hour talking to me about their ACC case. You know, so it's right. At point now.
And do you think that there is a need for donations over a certain or under a certain amount to remain anonymous?
Yeah, I think the whole, I know the argument is that, well, if they don't have anonymity, then all these people who would donate and support the party won't donate. On the other hand, I think there is a limit where you say, actually, when you're giving donations of a certain amount that only really wealthy people can afford, then I think people, you know, every other voter is entitled to know who is doing that, so that the risk or the threat of influence, undue influence, is easier to deal with. And I think that, you know, that the reason you have transparency and you minimise anonymity is so that you avoid allegations of undue influence by the wealthy. And that is an important part of our electoral integrity.
And moving on, do you feel that all people are treated equally in the justice system in regards to sort of drug crimes?
Well, I'd like to think so. You know, justice is meant to be blind. The police, when they're exercising their prosecutorial discretion, are meant to, you know, be free from discrimination and bias. But the reality is, when you look at some of the figures and you look at the profile of those who are charged and prosecuted, actually, there does appear to be a bias. You know, if you're Māori, young Māori, you are more likely to be charged with an offence that a Pākehā will not be charged with. When you look at the figures, you can't avoid the conclusion that there is a level of bias involved.
Do you think this is something that can be fixed by reforming the justice system, or do you think our drug laws need another look at?
Well, I think our drug laws need a look at for a range of other reasons, and that's what the referendum on personal use of cannabis is ultimately, you know, will be about. But I think if you look at like any crime, the starting point is what a police officer, or if it's not the police, whatever other enforcement agency, what they do and the discretion they exercise when they come to prosecute. And when you look at the figures, as I say, there is a huge imbalance against Māori and Pacifica. And the only way we overcome that or address that is to make sure that, you know, we have a police force that is as reflective of our community, and that the police officers, frontline police officers, exercising that discretion, are in touch with the community and are, you know, less prone to systemic bias that might be apparent on figures at the moment.
Do you think this sort of systemic bias extends to the court process? Because I suppose there's a recent case where a wealthy white male had his conviction for importing drugs quashed, and one of the factors was that it would have affected his future career ability to go overseas. And I mean, looking at that, you wouldn't see this happening if someone was very poor and mouldy.
Yeah. Look, I think that's a very good point, and we see that. We see that in other respects too. I know that, you know, young students, or, you know, usually law students who can commit, maybe usually a low-level crime, but often the argument is made, well, they should get a discharge because it'll ruin their future career prospects. Well, you know what? They, of all people, will know the risk they're taking when they sort of do certain behaviours. And I think, look, I've seen the decisions, and we've seen it more recently too, young people from wealthier families apparently getting easier sentences or lighter sentences that means that, you know, their life is not particularly disrupted, which would not happen for a poorer person or somebody from a disadvantaged sort of background. I've got to be very careful because, of course, I'm also one who's saying, who frequently says, let the judges judge. They're the only ones that have all the factors and the circumstances in front of them, and they've got to be able to make their decision. But, you know, we should be worried if there looks like a pattern in which, if you're very wealthy, you can get different results than if you're not wealthy. To some extent that happens because if you're very wealthy, you can afford, you know, the more high-powered lawyer, get a QC to come and do your sentencing decision, whereas, you know, anybody else might be reliant on the Public Defence Service or a legally aided lawyer, which is no criticism of them. but they won't necessarily have the same experience as a QC sort of thing. So that bias, if you like, is in the system right now.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.